You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Tim Cyclesman Wood, editor of Cycles News and Views on Cyclesman.com. He's speaking to us from Gulf Shores, Alabama. Welcome back to the show.
Jim, thanks as always for having me.
Tim, the Fed cut interest rates just before the end of October. Where are interest rates going and what do they mean for the markets?
Lower. They're going lower. We talked about this several months ago, and I don't know if you remember. Validate this for me if you do, but it was before the cut in September. I remember that because I had said that the rate cutting cycle had begun, and I think I also explained that after a rate cutting cycle, there's commonalities with every rate cutting cycle, and also with the rate hiking cycle. And when you pick this thing apart, what you see is that once the rate hiking cycle has plateaued, and then the boxes have to be checked to initiate the cut. You get the cut, and they start the first several cuts, and then you move into a pause period. And that pause period began last December and ran through August. So this was probably somewhere in probably June or July we were talking about this, because we'd been a long time and we were talking about Powell needed to cut and all this kind of stuff, and not defending him. I was just saying, based on this model, I said, no, the model says he doesn't need to cut, and we're in this pause period. And I said that until the discount rate and the T-bill rate got to a certain level, I said that they're not going to cut. And I said, somebody write it down. I said, until it gets in the 50 basis point range for that spread, I said, they're not going to cut. And we get into the September meeting, and I think we were right at that. I think we were at like 0.52, if I recall. And they made that September 17th cut. I believe it was September 17th. And then that resumed the rate cutting cycle. And then this last cut in October, I believe it was the 29th, that spread had widened to just under 0.5, and which was the range I had given. And bingo, the rate cutting cycle has resumed. And I think that, what do you remember me saying that we needed to get to that level before we would see the rate cutting cycle resume? You do remember that, right?
Yes, sir.
And so anyway, that now the rate cutting cycle, it's underway. It has resumed. And where are rates going? I'm going to do some projections on that and cover it in the next letter, but rates are going lower. And what does it mean for the market? Well, people tend to think, and you know, we're told by the media and I don't know, the common beehive think, we're told what to think, and it's not always necessarily true. And when you look back at the facts, these rate cutting cycles, particularly over the last 25 years since the dot-com bubble top, which is the environment we're in and the environment I want to focus on, reason being, let me digress for a minute. Reason being, this has been an inflationary period where they have been fighting the deflation since the peaking of the bubble, the dot-com bubble. And when I say they've been fighting the deflation, this market and the economy has been trying to deflate, and they have consistently blown it up with the intervention, the printing of money, as people say, which is really the expansion of debt, and created this ginormous inflation that we've seen, but it's all in response to the fight against the deflation. And it reminds me of a comment that, and I don't know if I can quote it exactly, that Christine Lagarde made, but she said something about if inflation was the genie, then the ogre was, deflation was the ogre. And what she was saying is that it's the bigger boogeyman is the deflation, and that's what they've been fighting. So when you look back at the facts, what you see is that, you know, everyone is like I said, there's a little bit of difference between some of the rate cutting cycles, but the reality is that the market peaked in the industrials in January of 2000, and the S&P followed in March. And then the rate cutting cycle, in that particular rate cutting cycle, it began in 01, early 01. They started cutting. And if you will remember, the market, you know, that's the market, that, like I said, the market top was in. We had the big decline with the bursting of the dot-com bubble. We had 9/11. We had to wash out into that that low, into 02, 03 low. But the point is that the rate cuts did not stop the decline. The rate cuts were not positive for the market. But they will tell you that it did. And that's where the beehive, the hive mind thinking comes. I'm saying it's just not reality. They want to paint the perception to you that this rate cutting is a positive thing. It's not. And then if you fast forward to the next cycle in 2007, in this particular, at this top, they began the rate cutting cycle in just before the top. They made the first cut in August, and they started cutting, and then we saw the top in October, and they cut all the way down. And I remind everybody, because everybody's forgotten about it, that was dubbed the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression. I've also heard it termed the Great Financial Crisis, but whatever. And they cut all the way down to a half a point. And the T-bill yield got down to, you know, 0.2 range, damn near zero. And less than 0.2. Actually, I see some readings at like 0.16, or there may be some lower than that. The point is, for all intents and purposes, we went to zero, and it cut the discount rate to 0.5, all the way from, what was the high? I'm looking at a chart, 6.25 to 0.5. Did it stop the decline? No, it did not. Not at all. But we're told, oh, the Fed, they're cutting is halting this decline. It didn't. And then fast forward to the last rate cutting cycle in this deflationary, or this, you know, I don't know what to call it, bubble that we're world that we live in. The rate cuts began in 19, late 19, August of 19. Yes, August of 19. And the market continued higher, as everybody should remember this one, into February of 20. And that time, that hike or that peak occurred right at that pause period I was talking about, where, you know, after the initiation of the rate cuts, you move into a pause period, and then the rate cutting cycle resumes. Well, that top happened to coincide exactly with that pause period. And then what happened? Market was down. That one was swift and quick. But rates went, again, all the way to zero for all intents and purposes. So, again, it didn't halt anything. And now here we sit, and they've cut rates. The first cut was last September, in September of 24. The market has continued higher. We had that decline in April, which I think it started trying to happen then. As it turns out, that was a higher degree cycle low. Makes perfect sense to me now what we're seeing here. And then as we move through this pause period, equities continued pushing up, and now the rate cutting cycle has resumed. And everybody thinks this is positive, and it's not. And I think it is very deflationary. And I think if you walk through the charts and look at what I just, you know, described, it's indisputable. Now, the fact, like I said, every market peak and rate cutting cycle, they're the same, but they're different, you know, in the timing a little bit. But inevitably, I think this means that we're pushing into a major top with equities. And we're going to face, like I've said thousand times, the third attempted downturn out of this six long-term economic cycle. So I'm sticking to that, and the handwriting's on the wall.
Of course, it's all about timing, isn't it? When does it happen?
Well, yeah, and we need to see structure. And I'll see the structure. You know, it hasn't set up yet. You know, you got to get the signals, and you know, I see it, and it'll try. And then it's the nature of the bubble or the nature of the underlying manipulation or the nature of whatever. But it just hasn't, all the cogs haven't clicked yet, if you will. And so we need to see that set up. And that's something that I'm monitoring again, of course, in the letters. But, once we see that, then, I think the nature takes its course from there.
Does that mean it's time to run to so-called safe havens? And are there any safe havens if we have an overall market crash?
I know this is... I'm not giving specific market advice. For one, you know, I mean, I'm just not. But number two, these things, as you know and as we have discussed, they can go on a lot longer than people realize. But we're getting mighty late in this at this point. But what I'm saying is, bottom line, I'm not giving market advice. I'm telling you which way the wind's blowing here. I don't see any real safe havens. And I know that people, gold has had its run. I know everybody got excited about gold, and I know that people don't want to hear this, and they think, well, you're just, you know, some kind of gold hater, or I don't know. I've been accused of all kinds of things when it comes to gold, and that's not the case at all. I mean, first of all, when you read the letters, I've said, you know, we had a 9-year cycle bottom in 02, and that cycle has been intact ever since. We've pressed higher and higher and higher and higher and higher. I've been saying into the current 9-year cycle top. I think at this point, there's a real good chance that gold has probably peaked. And my assumption is that it has. I can prove it on an intermediate basis. I saw that set up in the cycles. The longer-term cycles take longer to confirm. But my assumption is that gold has probably peaked here. That's also part of the setup, I think, with this deflationary setup. And the reason gold, we've talked about this before, but let's go back and talk about it again. The reason gold has done so well really since that 02 period, that 2000, I think gold bottom in 99, 2000, and it's been doing very well ever since. And this last 9-year cycle, this last run-up has been horrendous. And, you know, I'm not denying that at all. But the reason gold has done so well is because it has been a reflection of the underlying debt creation and thereby the inflation that debt creation has generated from the manipulation and fueling of this bubble higher. So it's been a direct reflection of the inflation that they have generated to keep this thing going. Well, if we're coming to the end of that, then it only stands to reason that gold would peak as well. And that's the position that I'm taking. Now, I'm doing some work, and I put it in the last research letter with the Dow-Gold ratio, picking that apart. And you can mathematically, it's kind of like working a mathematical equation. I mean, once you can verify the knowns, then you can back into the unknown and you know, figure out a path. And so I'm working with that. That's something I'm following to guide people with both, again, not advice, but guidance as to what just analysis as far as what the cycles are telling us with gold as well as the equity markets. And then we have, you know, the studies with interest rates, which are also a part of the overall setup for this long-term deflationary, you know, downturn that we are looking at once again, you know, the setup for that downturn once again. And then, you know, the question is, you know, obviously, can they save it again, or is this it? Well, we'll see. But anyway, I don't know if I answered the question or not.
We'll have more with Tim Cyclesman Wood right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap,
with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Tim Cyclesman Wood. Tim, is there a middle class recession in the U.S.?
Oh, absolutely. I think so. I don't have any hard data on that, just observation. But I was talking to a money manager friend I know earlier this week, and he had some data on car loans. And he was telling me about, you know, the number of car loans, what the average payment on a car loan is, the volume, you know, the number of the car loans, the versus the delinquency rate, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He was also telling me giving me some information on, or just in conversation, talking about something with it had to do with home mortgages, and I don't remember the details there. But yeah, I think the handwriting is on the wall there as well. I mean, my God, go to the grocery store, which like we all do, and you look at the price of your property taxes, your homeowner's insurance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You bet. I mean, the middle class is absolutely feeling it. They can't not. How can they not? And so, you know, yes, the answer is yes.
Now, you're talking about car loans. We're seeing repos at a almost record high.
That's what I'm saying. He was talking about the delinquency rate on the car loans. And you know, I was talking to another lady. She sells used cars. I just happened to be talking to her, and she said that started picking her brain, and she said that at least in this area, I can't speak for everywhere, but she said that the used cars at auction were going at a premium. And I said, well, why? And she said, because people are buying the used cars. She said, number one, the new ones are so expensive, and you roll them off the lot, and you know, the depreciation just kills you all, you know, the initial hit. And number two, the new ones, in my opinion, and from what I can see, from talking to people and kind of being a car guy, being around cars and having mechanics as buddies, and you know, just being a car enthusiast, the new cars are junk by and large. I mean, the GM engines, there's a recall on some of the GM engines. It's just the electronics in some of the other cars is bad. They're overpriced, and people aren't buying them, is what I'm seeing and hearing. I mean, yes, some people are, but you know, there's problems, I think it's just a combination of things that are the new car market. I think is probably also suffering. If you looked at some numbers, I suspect that you would see that.
Is the car market, or what happens with cars, a good indicator of what's happening with the American economy?
I don't have any data there, but you know it has to be. It has to be. It has to be one of the canaries in the coal mine, if you will. I have no data there, but you know it has to be.
Well, there was that old saying, what's good for GM is good for America.
Yep. But can I digress on something, sure, unless you have another question? Or before we go, I want to digress on something to paint a bigger picture. But go ahead if you got another question.
No, go ahead, Tim.
What I wanted, you know, talking about this deflation, in case somebody's just walking into this conversation and they don't know what we're talking about, let me clarify something. And, you know, there's been, and I don't want to, for those that's heard it, I don't want to repeat, but I want to be clear. You know, there's, going back in time, there's been, since 1800, basically the founding of this country, there's been five long-term economic cycles. And the fifth peaked in 2000 with the dot-com bubble. And all of those five long-term economic cycles have had a sound economic underpinning. And we've talked about this numerous times, but it's, like I said, it's time to repeat it. You know, be it the settling of the West, with the railroad bubble, the Industrial Revolution, the post-World War era, the dot-com era, etc. There's been some sort of a sound economic underpinning. That fifth cycle rolled over, bottomed in 02. Since then is when the explosion, if you will, of debt creation has just gone parabolic in with government spending. And that is what has fueled this entire sixth cycle that we're now in, that began in 2002. And there is no economic underpinning. There's no dot-com era. AI is a freaking joke, in my opinion. It's certainly not equivalent to the dot-com era. It's not equivalent to the post-World War II economic boom. It's not equivalent to the settling of the West and the railroad bubble. I think it's bullshit. So there's no real economic underpinning driving this sixth cycle. It's been, the reality of it is it's been fueled by, lack of a better word, intervention via the expansion of debt. And that cycle tried to turn down the first time in 07, and I remind people, that was the first attempted downturn, that first attempted downturn out of that sixth long-term economic cycle was the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression. Everybody's forgotten that. The second attempted downturn came with COVID, and we saw the expansion of debt exploded coming out of that. I forget the numbers now, but it was, I think before Trump left office, he injected himself, like, I can't remember what it was, the COVID Act or what they were called. There was a couple of things, and it was like over $6 trillion right there. It was the largest infusion, if you will, into the of debt into the system ever. And it was like, I forget the numbers. I want to say it was 3, 4, 5. I don't remember the numbers. Don't quote me on numbers. But it dwarfed what Obama did coming out of the great financial crisis of the 08-09 period. And they've blown it up. And now that's run its course. We've moved back into the rate cutting cycle. It's taken a long time. It's been 5 years, but here we are. And so now we face this third attempted downturn. That's where we sit with this rate cutting cycle, the apparent peaking of gold. Yes, equities are still hanging in there by a thread, but that's where we sit.
Go ahead.
Let me add one more thing. And what this is all about, again, to paint the picture, what this is all about is, again, the system is trying, has been trying to deflate. Each one of these downturns, by definition, is deflationary. But this time, the bubble is so big that it threatens the entire system. And that threat began with an 02 or 2000, 2001, 2002 period with that fifth economic downturn, and that's why we have seen what we've seen with this expansion of debt in the last 23 years is to try to keep this thing alive, to try to, because what's at threat is the entire economic system. And so, and they've done a magnificent job, obviously. It's been blown up and saved at least twice. So here we sit, and as long and grueling as the process is for this third attempted downturn now, and can they save it again? Who the hell knows? I suspect probably not. And then I also suspect that if not, then this is where we see, you know, the great reset, if you will, that they were talking about back in 2000, and I think part of that great reset will be probably have something to do with, you know, the central bank digital currencies. Perhaps it may, I suspect it's going to have something to do with the biometric IDs. I think it's all going to be tied together. I think that's what this AI thing is about more about the surveillance and the digital ID than it is, you know, like we're being told that AI is such a great tool to look up anything and write an email for you and do a report for you. I think it's about the biometric ID.
Tim, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you.
My guest has been Tim Cyclesman Wood, editor of Cycles News and Views on cyclesman.com. If you have any questions for Tim or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Find us on X at How Street. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.